Folks, I've got just a minute after the top of the hour, so we'll give everybody just another minute to get signed on here. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. I know it is an early morning for some. Okay, folks, I think we probably have who we're going to have here today. So thanks, everybody. Let me quickly capture attendance here. Oops, that didn't work. Much better. Okay, folks, just kind of a quick logistical check here to begin. So we've got a two-day meeting starting now, 7 to 10 today, Pacific time, and then tomorrow, 12 to 3. I'm looking down through the list. I don't see anybody who's joined on that I don't think anybody else doesn't know. Do we need to do introductions or can we bypass that? Anybody feel like they don't know somebody online?
Who the hell are you?
Yeah, trust me, since I've been up at since about 5 this morning taking phone calls already, I'm not sure who all I am anymore. So all right, so our goals today, everybody, at least this is what I kind of came up from my perspective, but certainly open if people have other ideas. I think there's a chance here for us this morning to start to maybe establish some new tenets that will help us kind of guide Hanoi. We've had a set of tenets in place around EdgeX for some time. They've been the basic ones that you can find out on our wiki site. I think there's starting to be a couple of them that new ones that might be emerging based on everything I'm hearing in some of the work groups. And I think that's going to be what we kick off this morning with to guide some of the thinking, not only about this release, but going forward. So that's my one underlying goal. The formal goal, obviously, is to try to figure out from all the possible features and tasks, all the technical debt that we have on our slate, what is it that we think we want to try and do for Hanoi? And again, this is not the planning meeting. It's not where we're going to get all the details out, nor is it where we even absolutely establish in concrete what we're going to do. It's really to throw out all the possibles and whittle that down to what we think might be something we want to debate as far as what's in Hanoi come our April meeting. So essentially, it's really trying to get rid of what is not going to be there, and we'll leave the rest on the table until we get to that Hanoi meeting. Kind of a sideline of that, of all the possible work too, I'd like to see if we can't start to maybe remove some things from the list forever. We've got some backlogs that are pretty long. Some of that probably has been out there since day one of the project. I know a number of you as chairs have looked at the list and said, what the heck is that? And I said, well, that's been out there for a while. So if there are some things in that list that we think just aren't ever going to really be tackled by the project anymore, let's get them out of there so that we can kind of thin down the backlog a little bit. Because that backlog is looked at. You'd be surprised the number of emails I get from people saying, hey, when is feature XYZ going to be in place? Does that sound fair? Anybody have additional goals they'd like to try to accomplish today?
I
All right, hearing none, I will assume the caffeine has still not yet made its way to the brainstem. So moving on. So some immediate issues. This one got brought up yesterday in the device service working group. Thanks, Tony, for bringing this up. So Tony ran some tests out there with the race condition flag on. And as I understand it, and Tony, please chime in here, a number of things kind of came to light with that. So Tony, you want to kind of fill people in on what you saw?
Sure. Yeah, so I was looking at the Discovery PR for the device SDK Go. And in this case, the PR had used the low-level Atomic package to do synchronization between Go routines. And I'd question the use of that. And so kind of propose an alternate that use mutexes instead. And everything I read about synchronization in Go said, hey, we have this great thing called a race detector. You should really use it to check your code. So when I tested the code with the race detector on, a bunch of errors popped up. I then went and looked to see if we had any bugs about race detection. And it turns out somebody had actually added an issue to either EdgeX Go or core contracts to enable the race detection when we ran unit tests. But for some reason, I think there's something to do with our build process, and the comment on this issue had said, hey, let's just defer this to Hanoi. So my question really is, do we have a bigger issue? Like whether or not we enable it for unit tests now, if there's DevOps work to be done, well, maybe we don't do that this late in the release, but I'm just wondering whether or not, you know, we should at least do some basic checking to see whether or not we've got serious bugs lurking. And then this could be, right, there could be false positives from this. It's like, I don't have that much experience with the race detector in Golang. So that's the general issue.
Thanks, Tony. So thoughts, folks. First off, it is what we are hearing from Tony a concern? I mean, again, I'm not trying to say it's not a concern. I'm just suggesting, do people have knowledge about whether or not what Tony is seeing is something that is genuinely real? A lot of those things can produce false positives. Does anybody run with race condition or race detector flag on? And do we know if this is a problem?
I think this, if it's the same thing, it's been brought in a couple different times within the context of DevOps working group, just because we've seen broken builds. I'm thinking, you know, Anthony Bonifide brought it in one time, and then most recently, I think maybe Brandon Foster or somebody had introduced it again. And every time that's been enabled within the pipeline jobs, or when it was enabled within the scripts, that then when it was running within the pipeline jobs, it would break the job. And I think that the action then was just back it out.
Yeah, that's what I remember. I think from the DevOps perspective, the underlying base container that we were using didn't have the proper tools that the Go tooling needed to inspect. As far as the other side of it, as far as like the technical side, using the race flag, I haven't used it much. I was playing around with it and did notice a lot. Of what I remember, and again, my memory can be a little fuzzy, I think Tony hit the nail on the head. It's like alerting you to problems that could come up, and then it's up to you to assess them. So it's not a definite, hey, there's bugs here. It's kind of, you have race conditions here. Are you handling this properly to ensure that this is being handled correctly and there's not an issue, or you're just aware of it and handling it properly? That's what I remember from it. I'm not an expert by any means.
Okay. So I guess where do we go from here? If we're not sure that they are really issues, but they are valid warnings, is this something we need to try to tackle sooner versus later?
Can I just bring a bit of background on this as well, please? There's a related thing that came up with some of the work that we were doing recently to do with, this was about updating devices and their last connected, last reported attributes. which has been bounced around a little bit. But what transpired was, if we had a situation where core data was updating the last reported flag on a device, and the device SDK, the device service, was updating the last connected timestamp on the same device, essentially at the same time, because they were doing it in response to the same operation. And what we would get was inconsistent results. Quite often only one of those timestamps would get updated, despite the fact that both operations had been requested. And so there was a bug reported, and this was mid-January. If anyone wants to look it up, it's EjexGo 2281. And the conclusion there was that, yes, you can execute these two separate requests at the same time. So core metadata is now handling these two requests to update different fields in the same object. And it's entirely possible that the two operations interleave in such a way that that you lose one of the results. And the comment made on the issue was that this was expected behavior given the current implementation. We closed it with a won't fix flag. Now, that sort of expected behavior given the current implementation suggests to me that actually we're likely to be riddled with issues such as these, whereby simultaneous access to the same object can cause us problems.
So I guess I'll chime in on this, because I had taken some notes ahead of the meeting, and I had race conditions, two bullets. One was internal, which is what we were talking about here, right? Which is really where a service may have multiple go routines, and there may be race conditions between those go routines. But then we have inner service race conditions, ordering issues. I know we work through, an ordering issue in Edinburgh right after the Edinburgh release came out, with configuration. I think we still have some ordering issues in some of the security services. At least I've heard some chatter about that lately.
That has nothing to do with the race flag, though.
No, it doesn't. That's what I'm saying. They're two different things. And what I'm saying here is that, like, what Ian's describing here is of that second class, right? It's like it's more along the lines of, right, the thing we ran into with Edinburgh and some of the security things. It's a completely separate, but it is race conditions. It's like external versus internal.
Yep. And also the issue that Ian brought up could be controlled through configuration, and that's ultimately what happened. The recommendation was that don't change the code, change the configuration to turn off the updates.
Yeah, and weren't we going to remove one of those two updates? Like, I think there was confusion about who should be updating the last connected, and
yeah, we want to push it out to the device SDK, as I understand, but right. That was considered, I guess, a breaking change, and so we decided to punt.
Okay, so let's come back to the question in hand, which I think is, should we be testing with the at some point? Testing a building with the race detector flag on, at least in the build of each service, as opposed to service to service potential ordering operation race condition issues. So as this sounds like, from what I'm hearing people say, yeah, there's an underlying monster out there that, you know, we've kind of unknowingly or maybe semi-knowingly known that might exist. And every time we try things with the race condition flag on, we get problems. We're not absolutely certain that everything that it reports is an absolute valid problem, but we probably should be looking at it. Is that a fair assessment, that we should somehow try and figure out a way to start testing with that race condition flag on, or is that oversimplification and overblown?
No, I think that's a fair summary.
So the question then turns to, so how soon do we need to do this? Is this something people feel we need to do for Geneva?
My take on this one is the sooner the better. I don't think it's like we have to say, okay, we have to run every single service with the race detection flag and run all our black box tests with it on. We're not as clear, like at this point in the release cycle, we're not going to be able to do that. But I would encourage people to start, you know, maybe we need to do just some initial poking around. I mean, what I saw, I think, were bootstrap related things that were being flagged by the race detector. So, yeah, I think we should do something, but not make it a drop other features to get it done type of action. Is that fair?
So if you look at the makefile for EdgeX Go, we already have the race flag on. I think what we're talking about here are unit tests that are in the different modules. So I'll post the exact line.
Okay, so it wasn't on in the in Device SDK Go, so maybe that maybe we need to turn it on in the SDKs or look at, like, you know, do we have it turned on everywhere would be number one. And then, you know, again, it sounded like, you know, there was a reason we didn't want to turn it on for unit testing for this release because it breaks everything. So maybe we make it a goal for Hanoi to that we have it turned on by default for all the unit testing, but we do just some more manual testing before Geneva releases to see if we've got any bugs.
So Trevor, when you've got it on in EdgeX Go and you guys are doing any kind of builds with the makefile there, what are you seeing coming out of that? Is it dropping out all sorts of race condition problems?
No, because the make test step would fail if that was the case.
Okay, so we think then, at least from that perspective, EdgeX Go seems to be clear. Obviously, there might be some things we'd want to do in CI/CD. We'll have to figure out the Docker problem going forward. But from that perspective, doesn't appear to be race condition issues being shown in EdgeX Go. So then, what are the other services we have to deal with? The SDKs on both ends?
The SDKs and all the modules.
All the modules, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I can, you know, where I saw it was, I was just, again, trying to test the discovery PR. So I'm not sure whether it was running device simple, right, the device service, or whether I was running core metadata. It was when I was running the device service. But again, I think we could go and, you know, try and, you know, have we tried to run core data natively in the foreground? Like, forget about the unit tests with the race detector on. Does it throw any errors?
So let's take this one step at a time, gang. It sounds like the race detector flag, we need to see if we can't try and throw that on into the make files for the SDKs. And, well, I guess the SDKs don't really have a make file, but for all the device services and the app services, can we throw that into the make file? And as we're running and testing things, let's see what shakes out. And I think also maybe in the modules. So can we take that as a first step, is in the make files for the applicable services, don't have it today, put that in place, see what comes out of that. And then maybe as a DevOps thing, not for immediate concern, but from a DevOps going forward for Hanoi, one of the tasks is, can we figure out how to get that race condition stuff to work inside of the Docker container so we can start to have some sort of report on that? Is that even doable?
Yeah, I mean, I think we had planned to do that, or we deferred that to Hanoi, right? Turn it on for all unit testing in Hawaii. So I think we're saying, yes, our goal should still be turn it on for all unit testing in Hanoi. I think a stretch goal for Geneva would be for some people to do some manual testing of our services to see if there are any errors being flagged.
Yep, and that's why, let's go back to and I'll take this to the working groups. So, and obviously Ian and Mike are online, but for the app services and device services, have you guys get that on for the make files? For the modules, I'll ask the owners of modules to kind of start to think about getting that in place. James, Greg, for the issues that we've seen, is there technical issues we have to solve for this to get the race detection and unit testing for Hanoi on? It sounded like from what Anthony was saying, there were some problems with containers and trying to do that.
Well, yeah, I need to get some clarification because I thought that it was backed out of EdgeX Go. I didn't know that this was in there now. And if it's not blowing up, then that's great. I don't know what would have changed.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. It's like it's on in EdgeX Go. Why doesn't it then work in all the others?
Maybe it used to not, but, you know, we've put in some
on, guys.
We did go to Go 113, didn't we?
I just sent you the link. I'm talking to Tony. I just sent you the exact line.
Oh, I'm just looking at the makefile and master.
Yeah, I sent you the link in the chat.
All right, I mean, I'm looking. Hold on.
Line 74.
Yeah, I thought it was backed out. That's cool that it's in. I don't know what changed other than we moved to Go 113, I thought.
Got it. Okay, so just for unit testing. So, huh. All right. I stand corrected.
So perhaps all this is a matter of getting it into the make files, then it will automatically happen just as it is in EdgeX Go today.
Well, as you do that, though, you got to run it first and verify the test will pass with it. And then and address any issues. So my question is, okay, it points out, does it fail the unit tests?
Yes, or it will fail the unit test. So you're right that a developer who's working on, let's say, that GoMod core contracts issue is going to have to say, okay, where does it fail in the module with the flag on, and then fix all those issues before they can actually turn it on in the DevOps pipeline. Yes.
Right. So maybe that was the issue, is it got turned on without addressing the issues.
Yeah, I don't know. The comment in the thread is a little confusing because it's saying something about Seago not being available in the Alpine image, but I'm not even sure that makes sense because if we're running make test, what sort of environment do we have? It's just a VM that's running the test portion before we actually do let's talk about a module. So when we run make test, that's just operating in a VM, right?
I think they have images build images that they still run within.
But it's a module. It's not like a,
right.
Doesn't have a.
So that can be built.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I know. I'm not positive. DevOps would have to answer.
Should be in a container, yeah.
It still runs within a container.
Okay.
And then run those tests. So
if it runs in a container, what's the base image?
Docker, hold on.
Well, runs inside of Docker.
Well, I would assume Alpine 1.3.
I would have guessed Alpine, but.
Because we could look at the build pipeline configuration between EdgeX Go and GoMod core contracts, for example, and potentially there could be a difference in the image that's being used for that build container.
Yeah, between modules.
And if so, and just services. Sync them and it should work.
Okay, well, it sounds like. We're kind of coming to some conclusions here that we probably need to do a little bit of digging in and research here, but it from what I'm hearing, if we have the device service and the app service teams go and make the changes to their appropriate make files, run that, obviously make sure that the unit tests pass. But if they do, then if we stick that in, we should start to get that coming out in terms of tests, even in our CI/CD, that would indicate whether or not we have problems, because the race condition flag would start to kill things if it did not. In terms of modules, maybe some work there to figure out, you know, when and how and where those builds are going to be detecting an issue. But let's just start with, if we can get it into the SDKs, it sounds like that's a good first step. And if we can run it through with the services that come out of those SDKs, we get some indication pretty quickly about what issues we have in those. Is that fair, or am I missing something?
One quick thing, Jim. I just was looking this up real quick. I don't think the race flag actually applies to tests. I just quickly Googled this. I see it as an option on build, but not on tests. So it may not even be a thing for tests.
So when you guys are using it in EdgeX Go, even though you're doing your unit tests, it's not being run as part of those unit tests.
I don't think that's true, because I've seen them fail in the past. I went through this with Daniel Harms. That's why we added the race flag in the first place. Because there was some concurrency problem where when he ran the tests with the race flag, it failed the test step. So we had to fix that. And then we added the race flag.
All right. So let's come up with some action items. So action item number one, Trevor, can you just confirm that the race flag works with unit tests? Is that possible?
All right.
Then let's put Mike and Ian on point to get that into their make files for the SDKs and related services. pending the fact that the race flag on actually does work in unit tests, then if we get that into the appropriate make files for both app services and device services, presumably that would start to show us something. Can we take those first two steps? Is that fair, everybody?
That sounds good. I brought this up because I just want to make sure we didn't have this big lurking issue. So I think that's fair.
And Trevor, if you come back and find out, oh, wait a minute, with the race flag on, it actually isn't doing anything during unit tests. Just, if you can, just circle back with me and then I'll work it through the other work groups. Is that fair?
Yep.
As I do seem to recall that being, even when I was there at Dell, I think we did some things and we saw some things with regard to unit testing that was causing some issues when we turned that on. So I think it is happening when the unit tests run, but...
It is. My apologies. I was reading on something else. It is.
Okay.
Sorry. I apologize.
No, it's okay. So, Trevor, you're off the hook. So we'll go with Mike and Ian then to add it to the SDKs and related services. We'll see what falls out from that. James, if there are issues that come out during DevOps, let us know. But it sounds like if it's already working in EdgeX Go, it's just a matter of duplicating that energy into that set of services.
And Jim, put me down. I'm going to take a look at just some of the other services outside of device and application services, because it may be that there are races that aren't present while we run unit tests that could be present when we run.
So this is a service to service type of race conditions you're really talking about.
Nope. I'm talking about the same thing.
Okay.
And if I find anything, I'll report a bug. And if not, then we're good.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, everybody. Any other issues on, or I should say, any other discussion on this issue? Great. Thanks, Tony, for bringing it to our attention. And thanks, everybody, for helping through that. Before we go on to our Hanoi planning, do we have any other immediate issues that need discussion here for Geneva, as we are now inside the, well, inside the 1 month time frame for the freeze? Which, just in case there.
Yeah, I guess we're just trying to land Lenny's config CPR. Do we need to run Lenny, are other people committing code while we're trying to review this thing? Like, do we need a mini freeze in order to get this in?
It's a lot of ripping out stuff and not a whole lot of actual code changes in there. So I've been keeping it rebased and
okay.
I may need to look at it again. But we just found a bug in my changes and Bootstrap that I just fixed. So I got to get that in there right now.
Okay. It looks like Brian found another problem with security config last night as well. So, okay. All right. We'll keep on top of that one.
Yep.
Okay. So I'm hearing no immediate action there. But Lenny, if there does have to be a problem, let us know. We'll try and take action as quickly as possible. Okay, end of the Geneva discussion. So let's move on now to talking about Hanoi. So this is a topic that's come up in a couple of work groups. Trevor, I think, did it best to try to outline this discussion. Unfortunately, it was in the system management meeting where we didn't have a lot of people there, but I've tried to capture it here. And so here's kind of the line of thinking, and that is, before we start scoping Hanoi, for that matter, before we're thinking about any release coming forward, maybe we need to start to step back a bit and reassess some of our tenants. Maybe not even reassess is the right word, but maybe put some new tenants in place, because there are some fundamental questions that are kind of lingering out there as a result of some of the work we've done in this release and some of the things we've been thinking about. And I'll kind of let you all read through these, but essentially the idea is, where is EdgeX running? Are we planning to have EdgeX start to run in more high availability distributed types of environments? You know, up to this point, certainly when I started the project, it was all about getting things to run on a Dell gateway, just to be blunt about it. And so we were thinking about a very thin edge type of platform. Now we're getting more and more into thinking about how to do this in clusters and Kubernetes types environments. That's no longer thin edge. Now we tried to build it even from the get-go to think about things like distribution of services, but admittedly, you know, I think everybody realized there's some technical debt there in the project. So is that really a goal of ours? Do we want to start to put that up front, that EdgeX runs all the way from thin edge to thick edge, if you will, the entire spectrum of what they call a fog? Do we or will we want parts of EdgeX to be distributed? And if so, which are those parts? And how would that communication occur from a secure perspective? We've got a lot of proposals out there on the part of Brian. I think those are much more tactical than kind of stepping back and making a strategic announcement about what we want to do there. Would parts of EdgeX need to run in high availability mode? We've talked about 12-factor apps. Do we need to abide by that? Would that apply to all services? Would something like a device service also have to be in that grouping? And what does our architecture of EdgeX start to look like at some point in the future, thinking about the use of message bus and maybe making things like core data optional? What does that say about our overall architecture? Where is persistence? Would persistence be in a message bus in some cases there? These are some of the questions that I think go to some of the tenets that it would be useful, I think, if we can have just a bit of a discussion about these, if we can come maybe to some conclusions, if not some conclusions, maybe at least start to set up the straw mans for arguments to go into our Hanoi planning meeting for April. People's thoughts, any reaction? Anybody want to take a stab at addressing some of these?
I personally think from Dell's perspective that we're looking at more and more computing resources being available closer and closer to the edge. And so being able to utilize high availability DevOps type deployment concepts farther and farther out to the edge, you know, maps to the scenarios that we're starting to engage customers with, where I think the thin edge still makes sense in the picture because you are always going to have some level of thin edge is at the device level. And so, you know, with the device services, it would make sense in my mind to have those run as standalone services, perhaps managed by an agent of some kind, single instance services probably, because they're going to be running, let's say, you know, on a very small constrained device that isn't going to be able to load balance or anything like that. So you could look at a device service as a single instance service that's managing some sensors downstream from it that's then rolling up to the core services deployed into some sort of cluster, and everything behind the core services also being in that cluster. Plus, there's also, once you start to have more and more compute resources farther and farther out to the edge, then you start to be able to look at, you know, different types of monitoring applications, telemetry, you know, how are logs reported, you know, control plane events, things that we've talked about. So I think it gives more visibility into the platform. You know, I think that, like I said, the capabilities are moving farther and farther out. And so I think we need to stop thinking about EdgeX running as a series of microservices on a Raspberry Pi footprint. And one could make the argument that if everything's running on a Raspberry Pi, why are they microservices? So, you know, to the question of whether they should be distributed and able to run on different hosts, the fact that they are microservices fundamentally means that they should be able to be distributed and run on different hosts. So I think that, I think the key takeaway though, for me, and just watching how things have evolved over the last couple of years, is that thin edge is always going to be there, but there's more and more compute butting up against it. And so everything except for the ingestion of that data, in my opinion, needs to be scalable and distributed.
Other thoughts?
I think I'd agree with Trevor largely. I think one caveat with respect to device services, I think you might want failover. Your device service crashes, restart it. But I think that's possibly about the level at which you need is a device service.
But don't you want that for all your services?
Oh yes, I would, yes. But I think that's a one feature that is also applicable to device services. But I think, yeah, you also want failover throughout the system, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I hear pretty consistently for that thin edge device layer is there needs to be an agent that knows or is watching that process, to your point, Steve, to be able to start it if it crashes.
Yeah, sure. I think, yeah, how you do it, there's multiple ways, but yeah, That's the way you're going to do. Sorry, Tony.
I was just going to say, is that? I guess it's not really possible with Docker Compose, right?
Can't you flag something as restartable under Docker Compose?
I don't know. Can't, I don't know.
I think you can actually,
Tony. I think Docker Compose, Docker will restart something it thinks has failed.
Because you have to provide a health check, and it renders a health check in the context of the container.
That's right, So again, that's possibly something we should possibly be doing, have a health check, so that at least Docker.
So let's avoid getting into the details of the
house. Okay, sure.
Let's talk about the generalities of what we think we want. So a good start of the conversation here. So good input from Dellside, Trevor. Thanks, Steve. Yep. So failover needs to be considered even on all services. Other thoughts?
Yeah, Rodney here.
Go ahead, Rodney.
From Beechwoods. We are interested still in the resource-constrained platforms, so we still see a market opportunity there for those. So, but we're not necessarily viewing it as a monolithic installation of Ajax on a Raspberry Pi. What we see is that there's still a need for device. Yeah, we still see a need for device services to be spread out over multiple hardware platforms. And so in some installations, the need for a very small cost-effective lightweight platform is still of interest for the data collection, because that's all that's really needed to solve the problem. So don't need any big high-end hardware deployment for that. However, those devices feed into larger devices, hardware platforms for the rest of the processing. So so I'm just kind of countering a statement of Trevor saying that, you know, the need for a Raspberry Pi. We still see ARM-based solutions. However, we are thinking of things in still in terms of it's microservices. They're deployable, they're scalable, you can spread them out. So we still think of everything as being with there being an agent that can pay attention to the service and restart it as needed using an agent for even dealing with firmware changes, software updates, security policy changes, that kind of thing. So So the kind of orchestration methods that Kubernetes introduces still make sense even on low-end platforms. So we'd like to see the talk about going forward and breaking EdgeX out of sort of a monolithic platform deployment and allowing for multiple platforms, the microservices to communicate securely amongst one another, and the dynamics of that changing. We see as a key feature that needs to be there for EdgeX.
So if I'm interpreting what you're saying, Rodney, you would agree with Trevor and all thoughts. The only thing is that in some cases it still would be a resource constraint. So what scalability and high availability would be optionally used, but not absolutely required. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Correct. I'm not opposed to high availability failover features. I'll be in support of those, but there's still a need for resource constrained platforms from our perspective.
But I'm
I don't
unclear.
Want everything to be dominated by, you know, oh, I've got these big massive machines that I can run everything on. And I've got, you know, things that, you know, that are massively expensive. No, that's not necessarily the only market.
I'm unclear, though. I mean, are you saying that core data and app functions also have to run on the small hardware constrained device, or just the device service for ingestion purposes?
No, they can run on small platforms, too. I just may not run them all on the same platform. So I got core data, apps, and app services are running on two different hardware platforms. And I'll have an array of device ingestions where I've got an array of those floating around. So think of 40 or 50 very small Raspberry Pis doing the data ingestion, but you have a larger but a larger platform that that'll run core data, another platform that runs the app services, but they're like embedded processors, but of better horsepower than say the Raspberry Pi provides. But they're not like, oh, I threw Itanium at it or something.
So what you're really looking at distributing them across smaller pieces, not hardware, but not really looking at HA, more distributed.
Yeah. But I'm not opposed to HA.
Well, yeah, I think we should be able to, we should be moving towards the ability for HA to happen.
So the way I see it is the HA and the failover does get me features, but it also brings into mind the idea that, because before our model for EdgeX deployment was kind of monolithic. So we're always saying, oh, we don't need to secure the microservices because, well, they're all running on the same hardware platform, so they're all nice and safe. And I don't want to presume that. I can't presume that.
So my take on this is we've yet to release an LTS release. We're in the middle of a two-cycle effort to do V2. I really would like to see us stay focused on getting to a solid platform that we can support for multiple releases. I agree with Trevor that I think device services running on a separate platform is an important use case, and we should figure out how to do that and make that a first class configuration. But I think at least for Hanoi, the idea of trying to run the core services or app services and go fully distributed, I think is an overreach. Just my point of view. I mean, I think, you know, if you consider that like a core instance of EdgeX with a config provider, right, and a registry provider and security, you could do failover between multiple boxes running that stack. And again, if you felt like you needed to have separate device services, we should support that use case also. That's my suggestion.
So Tony, are you, let me make sure I understand correctly. So are you suggesting let's focus on a core and in addition, make sure, is it all of services or certain services can be run in more of a distributed mode? Which one are you advocating?
Device services only.
Okay.
I just think we need to, you know, crawl, walk, run, right? It's great. And I'm not saying that somebody shouldn't be able to take EdgeX and do this themselves, but I think our reference implementation of EdgeX, like we gotta get this thing solid and quit making these giant changes every 6 months so that we can get adoption and people can start deploying it. And I think going to a fully distributed EdgeX right now is the wrong move.
Tony, I agree with you. I think we have that as our overall architectural objective. We clearly would like to get there, but as you say, perhaps it's better done in some small incremental steps.
So let's put timing aside. So in a perfect world, set Hanoi and the release schedule aside, what's our end goal? Does our end goal look like one where all services except for device services are HA? Is that our hope? Is that our goal?
That's what I'd be looking for.
I think so. I think that's where we're going.
Tony, would you, eventually, timing aside, would that be a goal you think is reasonable? Tony?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking of like the typical deployments, like on an oil rig or in a retail store. Is a retail store going to really have distributed services? Will you do that on an oil rig, or is it going to be a box that's big enough to do the job? You know, so I don't know. I haven't heard the customer.
Joe Pearson here. I can actually jump in and make this a little more concrete. I've been reading up on some IDC reports on how they classify the taxonomy of platforms that are deployed specifically for the retail use case at the edge. So ignoring fog or the network cloud or network edge right now, specifically talking about the far edge. They see within retail the need for light edge purpose-built platforms. I would interpret that as light platforms capable of running containerized applications, light edge general purpose, which is more clusters, heavy edge purpose-built, and heavy edge general purpose. So what they're actually seeing today in retail is the need for both clusters and beefy as well as light platforms deployed for retail in the stores. So you can think about this as a Dollar Tree versus a Walmart type of deployment difference. Both are needed.
But I guess, Joe, I guess what I'm saying is you could basically have, say, you know, go back to Jim's, right, the Dell Gateway, right, the Dell 3000. Sure. You could have two of those running the entire stack and have those set up in a failover, right, scenario. And then you might, again, also have like a Raspberry Pi on the gas pump, right, with just a device service on it.
That is correct. And I've seen something similar in manufacturing.
But so this goes to the old classical architecture, right, scale by duplication of equipment or scale internally by software division and high availability of the software, right? I mean, that's classic arguments that's been used forever.
And once you start adding enough devices, you're going to have to go to high availability and scalability at that point within a cluster. But it all depends on what the actual demands are from people deploying.
So, Joe, boy, if you could send a copy of that IDC report, that would be great. But
yeah, absolutely.
If we take that as, I'm not saying we take that as gospel, but if that's kind of the way things are looking, would not that say, though, that we still have to kind of build EdgeX in support of high availability, even if there are going to be situations where this very thin edge says you don't have high availability on, you still have individual services out there running on some limited capability. In other words, you can't either you have to bifurcate and you start developing two platforms, one that's HA and one that's not, or else you've got to build the services so they're HA capable, but you can turn it off and only have one where the platform doesn't support that. Or am I wrong there?
Well, it gets kind of tricky because let's say you want to, logging, right? Logging in an HA cluster is going to be written to standard out probably, and then that's going to be captured and sent into a repository for analysis. And if you don't have that high availability, then you've pretty much got just logging being written to standard out where no one can see it. So then you configure it like we do today to either write to a file or to another service altogether. And so then you start looking at these cross-cutting concerns and you say, well, wait, we can't make a decision here because it has to be flexible if it's going to be turned on or turned off. And we've done that, I think, for the last several years. And I guess what I'm trying to advocate is the industry is moving in a particular direction. And I think we need to make some choices about the direction of EdgeX. Because I think with all the flexibility and the all, well, we don't know, it needs to be configurable. I think we put ourselves into a lot of design complexity because you don't have a point of view. I think we need to have a point of view.
Other opinions?
Yeah, I'm not saying we shouldn't go there. I'm just saying Hanoi is too early.
And that's fine. I'm definitely with you on steps to get there. And I'm not suggesting we get there by Hanoi, Tony. I'm just trying to answer the question more generically. So if time wasn't of the issue, if we didn't have release schedules we had to meet to, which we do, and we know we got to come back to that, how would we answer this question? Because building for high availability is a bit of work. And to Trevor's last point, it sounds like we're getting to a point where either we're going to have to go that route and build to that route, but then we're taking out some of the flexibility so that if you are building for the very thin edge, is the platform going to work for you? You know, to Joe's point and the multiple types of deployment and use scenarios, if we start to build for high availability, if everything's built for high availability, I'm concerned that those very thin edges might look at the platform going, that no longer fits, or it's not as nice as it used to be.
I do get worried about that. I mean, there's aspects of it that I like, but I,
I don't want EdgeX to get so heavy that, you know, I need gigabytes and gigabytes of RAM and disk space just to make this all work, because that starts getting very expensive. But there are features of that are useful. So I don't want someone who's entirely cloud-based to drive the entire conversation. I'm at the other end trying to keep the cloud from taking over.
I do have concerns too that if we start to go and build EdgeX to be closer to HA, and by that I mean closer to the cloud, we're going to hit competition. There are a lot of platforms out there that do this, that only run in an HA kind of realm. And you guys know that some of our competition is out there and what types of claims they make. That is a concern of mine, that all of a sudden we're encroaching into an environment that we may not belong. At the same time, if that's exactly where the industry is going, to Trevor's point, we don't want to be without a home either. We don't want to be building to such a thin edge that in a couple of years down the road, where thin is not even really there anymore, that we're out of work and out of place.
I think there's always going to be a case for a device, right? Like, think about a device that's not online all the time. There's always going to be a case for running code at the edge. And, you know, again, most of the customers that I work with are looking at high availability as like two separate boxes, because again, these edge boxes are super cheap. So I just worry that if we go like fully distributed, we're also going to really complicate the platform. And I think we've got enough, I think we have enough issues with complexity already.
I've heard from about three or four of you, got about 20 people on the line. Others want to chime in? Don't all chime in at once now.
What have you seen from the China Initiative? Remember they had this big marketing and exposure kind of thing, and they had a lot of retail people coming there. Maybe Camillo could say something, or does anybody from Intel know?
I'm not sure I'm aware. I know that we were doing retail projects with companies in China, but
Is the question, Malini, from a retail perspective, how do they view the edge? Is it getting closer to...
implication is it can be a pretty thick edge. They want to do a lot of, you know, processing with camera data and things like that. This really is a customer-driven question, right? So I was just wondering if we had any more customer data.
Yeah, that's a good question. Do we have real-life scenarios out there where they're asking for HA versus... just all on one big box?
Well, we did an internal proof of concept with Lowe's for a retail self-scanner POC that didn't particularly use EdgeX, but it was an edge solution. And they had a server room right on-prem. So in every store, they were saying, okay, we're going to have these different devices out on the shop floor or out on the customer floor, and those will be rolling into infrastructure that's sitting on-premise. And so you have the sensor itself. We need to be able to ingest those readings and then bring them in to upstream services that are going to sit in a closet. So, yes, I mean, it's right there. The thing, you know, you either have these devices that have compute right on board, and so they're doing some sort of processing from the sensor readings or the camera or whatever it may be. And you need to update that model or that logic on those onboard compute devices. Or you just simply need to be able to ingest the sensor readings from a very thin edge to a nearby place that has more compute to be able to process it. Or in that nearby place with more compute, you also then need to be able to manage all of the device landscape and see everything that's connected and what is actively working. So yes.
So, well, I heard a lot of distributed there, but not so much as high availability.
Well, the what's running in the closet on prem is a Kubernetes cluster.
So let me try to take a step back from this. It sounds like what I'm hearing is, well, there certainly from a marketplace, from things like Joe's IDC report, from Trevor's beliefs and some of the customers that he's dealing with, there looks like there may be a tendency towards HA. It sounds like from a general perspective, we'd like to get a little bit more input from a real user perspective here and maybe do some thinking about this in terms of where does EdgeX really fit on the spectrum of edge compute. In other words, jury's still out on that question. With a tendency or a leaning towards wanting to go high availability, but the complexities of that and the unknowns of users, we say still to be determined on that. But with regard to service distribution, what I'm hearing is nobody's arguing not to build EdgeX to be more distributable. Is that a fair statement?
I'd just say walk with caution. Walk with caution. It's going to really complicate things. I mean, we can do it, right? But again,
you're talking about distribution, Tony,
distribution, right? Four different boxes in that retail closet. You know, one running core data, one running core metadata, and console and vault on the other one.
Well, why is it microservices then? I mean, because, you know, the other approach that the community could take is they could say, well, you know, the heck with this, clustered deployment footprint. That's not what we want to target. We could go and, you know, target the edge in constrained compute environments. But again, I still think the point about having a point of view is important, because if you decide you're going to pick one or the other, you could say we want to operate in these constrained environments, so we don't have to worry about all of these other concerns related to a clustered deployment. And that's a legitimate choice, but just make a choice, because right now we're sort of in a position where we're kind of this and we're kind of that. So, you know,
I have a question. All the EdgeX services, might we want to consider them as a pod? And if in that closet we have a Kubernetes cluster, would it not be a case of having one or more instances of this pod? And, you know, so all the microservices really look like they're in one logical host with them being in a pod, and the other guys, you know, it launches another pod. If I need high availability, it launches another pod if one died.
Sure, but why have them be microservices then?
A pod is composed of microservices. A pod is multiple containers.
But it's managed as a single unit.
Yes.
Well, but we have microservices today, and we manage them as a single unit because of our versioning scheme.
So and we've had a discussion about that. Why should we do that? I mean, we talked about that in Seoul, about coming up with a model whereby all of the capabilities for the core services could be deployed in one service, not in three.
Sure.
So
let me ask a fundamental question then. Are we at a point at which EdgeX has to think about another version of itself? Maybe we need a, kind of like what IoTech's done, an XRT, which is real-time monolithic app, although it's very tiny, it's written in C, a single application that operates at the very thin edge to data ingest. Mm-hmm. And then we have EdgeX, which is high availability. I mean, are we getting to a point at which we need to think about a bifurcation of this basic platform?
I think we need to do something well, like finish Hanoi with V2, make it rock solid, and then if we want to start to, you know, branch out, we can do that. But I just feel like we keep going like release after release. We've got to do this, and we change things, and we haven't yet gotten to an LTS release. So I feel like this is all well and good, but I still think timing plays into it.
How about this as a suggestion for organizational purposes? So instead of necessarily a bifurcation kind of thing, we sort of have the notion of vertical working groups, and the idea was that was targeting to market needs. And so oil and gas, retail are two examples. But what if we change, what if we create another level of vertical organization where there is one group that talks about using EdgeX in a high availability environment? We talk about EdgeX being used in a resource constrained environment. And so the folks that don't want to know, the folks that are comfortable with the complexities that get introduced in the high availability environment can go and deal with that. And the folks that find that too complicated don't have to address it. But we have a group addressing EdgeX in a high availability environment.
It'll be two different products. It'll be two different products then.
Yeah, I think that would be, I think we need to, you know, we're thin as it is with developers.
I think that would be two different. I'd like to keep it together. I don't see why we can't add some HA features while keeping the core of EdgeX pretty portable and applicable to other environments.
So if that's the case, it sounds like we're back this. Maybe we're leaning to HA, but we need more real customer input, and we're careful not to lean away from the very thin environment. So we're a little bit on hold there now. I know that doesn't make everybody happy, but let's leave that for just a second. Because I want to get everybody to a break here, because otherwise caffeines will run low and bathrooms will need to be attended to here quickly. But if we come back from a quick break, could we discuss this question? Is if we say HA is on hold for just a little bit, obviously we'll continue to reassess this. Can we discuss this question? And that is, should full service distribution be a goal? And again, let's do that outside of the context of a Hanoi release, but just as a general question, is this something we're ready to commit to right up front?
What I think that's the real question though, Jim, right? That is, it's not like whether we do HA or not. It's like whether we embrace like being able to fully distribute services like the cloud model.
Yeah, I think when you talk about full distribution, that doesn't mean that you start looking at things like logging differently than what we have today. We still have a logging service, it could be distributed and live someplace else, and how you implement, that's up to you. And we're not ready from a security standpoint yet really to address full distribution. So there's a lot of work in saying you're gonna go to a full distributed model. There's a ton more work or even considerations outside of distribution that go into HA concerns, is my thinking. Maybe I'm wrong there.
I mean, you could run HA today. Again, you have two boxes, right, with a failover network setup, and you could do HA. Now, you'd have problems with devices that are connected wired, but...
So what I'm hearing you say, Tony, is that, wait a minute, this question really is still to this question. Distribution is still to an HA question.
Yeah.
Do others feel the same way? Is that service distribution a stepping stone to HA and other concerns, but not necessarily going full HA at this point? Or am I wrong?
I believe distribution is a necessary step to HA.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, I agree too.
I agree. And like you said, it makes important security problems urgent when you start with distribution.
Right, but like to Malini's point, you could run all the services in a pod, right? And effectively, you're doing the same thing as what we do on the edge. So the choice is whether or not, right, EdgeX, right, you know, in Kubernetes terms, runs as a pod or runs as everything, you know, individual pods.
Well, what about that, just the pulling out device services? I mean, the crawl step with making all of the services distributable is make device service something that could run on a different platform. There goes our, you know, so that it, that raises the urgency of the security concerns.
But Rodney, to your point, that's an important one. So just device service separate and the rest of the guys in a pod, that's the only one you have to super protect. But you're right, it's a pattern on how you secure that we could use elsewhere.
And oh yeah, I think once you solve that, you've solved it for the others.
Yeah, this will come up later, but that is something I would be interested in tackling as part of the Open Horizon integration run phase.
Yeah, I guess so if we want to break that question down to, are we in support of distributing device services out to their own box. To me, if you solve that problem, you've solved it for all services at that point. What would be the difference?
The difference is there's a lot more, I mean, it's a solution, yes, and it'll solve for everything, but it's not something that you might necessarily want for all your inter microservice communication within a pod. Just because you can do it, you might not still do it if you don't need to. It's resources. So if you deploy the rest of the microservices in a pod using something like Kubernetes, you still might not want to encrypt all the communications, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, you also have to think that, like, you know, we need a single instance of console and vault, and so we have to think about clustering them. Like, what about all our third-party dependencies? You know, device services are in some ways are kind of easy also because they're not currently gated by Kong, right? So they're kind of off on their own.
So what I'm hearing is, okay, even on the question of service distribution as a goal, still TBD along with HA. So we're down to distribution for device services as a goal. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Sounds like a good place to start.
So on the big questions, in other words, any new architectural tenants, we're saying at this point where EdgeX runs, the only thing we're really worried about is that device services could potentially run someplace else. Yep, you could distribute it, you could HA it. Again, that's all on you. We're not disallowing it, we're just saying that's not one of our tenants at this point. In terms of distribution, we just said, just worried about device services. So we're not really talking about high availability, we're not talking about 12 factor yet. The only other question then left in this stack comes down to a discussion around message bus support. And we could cover that after we get back from a short break. Is that a fair assessment on the top three questions so far, gang?
Could we add one more, Jim, to explore at some point, not in Geneva, but Hanoi a little later? Because we have a proliferation of microservices. Are there some that we want to combine together?
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
That was Trevor's point earlier, right? That,
yeah. Trevor's point, like, why do we have so many microservices? And it's a valid point because there's so much race condition, stepping them in the right order. We have a lot of them. Do we need so many? Like, does it make sense to have a microservice that does initial setup of all of these guys, like console, Kong, Vault, and then the rest of the guys can go through type of stuff?
Okay. So I've got about 10 minutes after 8 o'clock. When we come back from break, maybe let's break down these two questions. I don't want to spend too much time on these questions because we do want to get to kind of Hanoi planning, but I think these are fundamental to answer before we start getting into Hanoi planning issues. Calling it 10 minutes after the hour, can we break until 20 minutes after the hour and come back and hit these questions? Is that fair, everybody?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Well, everybody, I've got a couple of funnies up there as we return. One is for my wife there. It's on the right. I love that one, given our current coronavirus situation out there. Maybe you find this to be the case as well. And the other one, just to kind of keep us grounded, the fact that I do appreciate everybody's opinions, and I obviously offer my own up as well. But always keep in mind that opinions are just that. Okay, are we ready to get started? Somebody give me a confirmation you can hear me okay out there.
I'm clear.
Very good, gang. One point of consideration that kind of came to mind is I was thinking during break, and I was looking down through the list of folks who are online here, and it's all people from companies that we've started to share this with the exception of Beechwood and Rondi. That's why I've also asked for a conference call with you and Brad. That is, there is a proposal that Keith Steele and I have been circulating out there about a little bit of change to the organization of EdgeX. And the reason I mentioned that is it does occur to me that a lot of the questions we're coming to come back to questions of users. You know, what are users going to want? Who are our users? And we've got multiple users out there, from high end to thin edge. Getting more input from those types of folks might be able to start to lend us more credibility when we get into some of these questions. So again, I'm not suggesting that we can't or won't take actions towards any of these things, but that circulation of maybe a reorg that puts a little bit more emphasis on users might be something we want to consider. So if you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, again, we've briefed everybody and all the companies except Beechwood's that are on the call right now. We'll start to circulate that with everybody here shortly. We just want to get some feedback from some groups. But keep that in mind that maybe it's time for us to really start to get a little bit deeper and richer user input into our organization. Okay.
Just before we start, you know, it's funny you brought that up because right before we broke, I wrote down Vertical Solutions Group, exclamation point. So this is our pre-wire. We're going to do the actual planning at the end of the month. I think there's an opportunity here to go back to the Vertical Solutions Working Group and say, this is, you know, this is what's been going on. You know, this is the kind of input we need from Vertical Solutions Working Group when we do the actual planning at the end of the month. Maybe we won't, but.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Tony. I think no matter what we do with regard to the proposal that Keith and I sent out to everybody, I do think it's time we really start to put some emphasis on more user input. I know that's something near and dear to my boss. Keith really wants to try and bring more user input in. More user input helps us, if not solve these problems or address these problems, at least this gives us some concrete footing on which we can hopefully make some decisions. And I don't think anybody would argue that. So something to consider.
I mean, one other point, maybe we actually make some specific time in that virtual face-to-face or call out for customers. Just tell, you know, people are using EdgeX.
Yeah, that's what our hope was, especially we were lining up to do that at Limerick. And unfortunately, the world went to shit. And all the customers we were going to bring to that conference can't do it. We're trying to get them to be there virtually. So, but I do think that planning meeting at the end of April is going to be a point at which some of the conclusions about organization will hopefully be on the table, and we can make steps forward to do that, to again get that customer input sooner versus later.
Great, thanks.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks, everybody. So let's go back to a couple of questions here, gang. See if we can't address these a little bit, and then we'll move on to some Hanoi tasks targets. So putting aside HA, putting aside full distribution, if we're at least of the opinion that we need to start moving to device services as more distributable, not that they couldn't be distributed today, but distributable in a way that really is kind of locked into the product, so to speak. Do we also want to consider the question of message bus as part of this? I think we've been leaning towards the idea of using more message bus technology in EdgeX even from day one, but really in earnest, I think here with this last release, we've started to see some places where it could really be of value. Is that a fair statement to say? Is it that we believe that we want to use to more message bus technology as an option or as an alternate to REST moving forward between services? Is it just going to be used in select areas? What are people's thoughts on this one?
Yes to message bus, but we did say for moving forward with V2 that we were going to cherry pick use cases, but you know, I think publishing sensor data is one that we've talked about a lot. And I also think that the control plane events is one that we've talked about a lot, but you could run, I mean, you could run notifications, you could run commands, you know, you could really put this in as an alternate transport in a lot of places. But I think moving away from supporting a REST API is too much of a change for the community to support.
So you're saying, yes, we need to think about it as an alternate in all places, but it would be as an optional alternate. We're not taking away REST. We're just saying you could use message or you could use REST, your choice. Is that right, Trevor?
Well, so I think for V2, what we've talked about is preserving the REST API, and then that's going to be the primary API. And what we said was that we would enable the services for message bus to be able to take on more and more capabilities.
Yep.
And that we would identify those going forward. I'm not trying, because we already tried to advocate for replacing REST with message bus once, so I'm not trying to do that again. But what I'm saying is that for other use cases, you know, I do think that we need to enable the services to be able to publish wherever and whenever through a message bus, whether that's for actually sending a command, ingesting data, control plane events, whatever that may be. I think all the services should be enabled for that publication.
Go ahead, Steve.
I think I'm with Trevor there, but I think I would say do it incrementally. So start with data, if you like, and then perhaps, as you say, notifications, and then think about it. But I would do data first, I think, and then we'll get some experience of how that looks. And beyond that, I'm less sure.
So the one thing, you know, the last time this came, so I actually, before I make this comment, what's our story with Zero MQ? And I'm sorry, I keep asking this over and over again. Still the default for core data to app services?
Yes, it's still the default.
But okay. There is now an example implementation with MQTT in place, so you could rip out Zero MQ and replace with MQTT. Given the example, the only thing you have to do is pick your message bus, your broker.
Right, but we're not planning to make that a default for Geneva. Is that a consideration as default for Hanoi?
Don't have that on the slate. And gang, I'm asking a question even above and beyond Geneva, Hanoi, or other release. I'm saying from a tenant.
Right.
What do we want to say? Are we saying that, yes, today EdgeX supports REST. As we move forward, our intention is to put more and more message bus capability in place to where in the future it's an alternate for almost every service. Are we saying, well, we're not really ready to make that statement yet. We're just saying in select services, we'll make the determination where message bus technology is in place, which I think is where we're at today.
So I wanted to, you know, again, I wanted to like understand the tactical, what we were doing with Zero MQ tactically, whether we're going to do that. My comment about message bus in general, I think, you know, again, we said we would crawl, walk, run. So we'd start, right, you know, in a particular service or service types and add it. But again, I think one of the things that we need to think about with message bus versus REST is REST is all about request response. So if we do like introduce this concept of message bus, we want to like go to a message bus, maybe only environment at some point. We just need to think about the, you know, adding generic events. Generic events could be used. We talked about them a little bit in the context of control plane events. So when things change, but you could also almost think of like, you know, I mean, I'm not sure how the readings on Zero MQ work. Do they actually trigger responses? Or are they also just events?
Events.
Just events.
Okay. So really, we're bringing that concept. We bring that concept of events. Events don't really fit into REST, right? You have to like hammer them in through that, you know, callback mechanism. So anyways, that's my piece. I think message bus is good, but that, you know, let's plan like, hey, this is really what an EdgeX event is. This is how we would use it, and then go and target specific areas of EdgeX for actual implementation.
So Tony, let me make sure I'm clear. When you say generic events, is what you're talking about, we have to think about how we provide a response in a message environment, and how we have to deal with security in the event requests, or what are you talking about when you say generic event?
It's just a type of messaging. So REST is all about, I make a request, I get a response back.
Yep, got okay. That. But I'm trying to understand when you say generic event.
If you look at Dbus, which is the IPC used on a Linux desktop, Dbus defines requests and responses and events. And events are just basically, they show up on the bus. Nobody has to respond to them. In fact, you can't respond to them.
Fire and forget.
Yeah, fire and forget. They're just, something happened. Here it is.
It's what we're doing right now from core data to app services.
And so, you know, again, you could think about generic events like, hey, this object changed. Here are the changes. Fire and forget. You want to do something about it? Cool. But it doesn't actually require anybody to do a response. And again, that's hard to do in a REST environment. Like, you'd have to use callbacks, and there are actually responses. It gets kind of, you know, doesn't
work. I think there's appropriate places for the message bus, and there's appropriate places for the REST.
And you could do the request response over message bus too, right? I mean, that's what, you know, one of the reasons we have the DTOs and, you know, again, part of the work that Trevor and crew worked on.
And I won't belabor the point because it sounds like it's just me, but I mean, I'm well familiar with the concept of messaging and the various messaging paradigms. The term generic event doesn't mean anything to me. And again, maybe it's just me, but when you say we need to think about generic event, that doesn't tell me what I'm supposed to be thinking about.
It's just a message that gets sent on a bus that nobody has to respond to.
Yep, but that's all. Messaging is that way by default.
Like a Unix or Linux signal. Something happened, an interrupt. It happened, but you don't have to acknowledge it. And all I'm saying is that if we introduced events for control plane, right? Again, like core metadata, things change in core metadata, these event messages get fired onto the bus. Core metadata is not looking for anybody to respond to them, but you can. So I'm just saying, if we want to move forward towards a message bus, we just need to think about our messaging that, hey, now we're actually going to be like, if we're using message bus, supporting something that we don't really support when we're operating REST only.
Okay. So I have about a clear as mud opinion from everybody on this. So are we heading down a path where, yes, we want to implement a messaging technology in kind of a point-to-point way today? That's where we're at, or at least that's what we've been saying. But the future, do we want to make any statement there about, we think in the future, EdgeX will offer REST and message between all services, or we're not ready to make that statement yet?
I think in the future, you could, but I think right now what we're saying is we want to enable the services, and then we want to be able to pick the use cases that we support. And we're not looking at replacing the REST API currently.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's some obvious usage of PubSub that we should get in now. Other cases, you know, REST may just be fine, and you may never go PubSub. I think you need to individually consider those use cases.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, core data moves to support data, right? Really, what else, you know, what are we really talking about here? So I think, you know, again, control plane for core metadata would be interesting, and device services talking directly to the bus is, again, something else we've talked about. So it just may be that it just doesn't make sense to convert everything.
Got it. Yep, that makes sense. Okay.
So yeah, I think I'm in favor of that as well. The idea of device services, putting it out on a message bus that can go all the way to application services.
And that's the part that seems very ideal for a message bus. So it's an augmentation or an alternative for a certain part of EdgeX, but not necessarily all of EdgeX.
Fantastic. Thanks, everybody. So let me see if I can summarize, and then we get to Malini's new fifth question here. But on the basis of what we've talked about today, the conversation has gone that with regard to HA concerns, distribution, messaging, things like high availability, things like total distribution across EdgeX, are all still in a little bit of a to-be-determined mode. We are hedging towards things like high availability eventually, hedging towards total distribution eventually. Everything to be considered kind of on a case-by-case basis, and at least in terms of HA and full distributed services, we're saying not yet. At least we're not willing to put that stake in the ground. The only thing we are willing to do at this point is say we think we should start to look at where device services should be able to be completely distributed in a way away from the rest of the services, meaning we'll have to address probably some security concerns between device services and the other services. Have to think about that service living completely isolated from other services. And that's pretty much where we're at. Everything else is kind of case by case. Is that a fair summarization?
I think so.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I will try to, I'll try to write that up and kind of make that as a statement, put that up front. That I think in terms of some of the bullet points we've got in our Hanoi planning, that statement alone helps us say, well, that tells us, you know, that this topic is not on the table for Hanoi, or that this topic is on the table for Hanoi. So that helps us a little bit. And even though that there's some fuzzy gray areas in there, I think that might help us a little bit. And certainly, again, more user input on this is going to help make things a little bit more concrete as we go forward. Let's come down to Malini's question. So this has been a question that's been out there circulating in different threads for some time. It was discussed quite a bit, I think, at Phoenix. Are there services we think we need to combine?
I mean, what I was talking about in Seoul was combining all the core services into one. Probably separate out core data, since we're talking about core data becoming support data. So if you look at command and metadata, those, in my opinion, don't have to be two different services, because command relies on data from metadata in order to know what to do. So you could just make those two different endpoints on the same service.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I was thinking of core metadata and core being the same, not necessarily being separate.
Say that one more time, Roddy, because you cut out a little bit. So core metadata and what?
Core data. So core and core metadata should be the same.
Right, but core data, we're moving to support. We may move to support data, so it might not be a core service anymore. Maybe optional, but you could do it that way too, right? And just turn it on via configuration. I think it just would make it, you'd end up with a heavyweight service that you might not use all the functionality of.
Yeah, to me, this sounds more like a configuration deployment sort of option that we might enable for some particular services that make sense, but people still may want to put them separate. And I think there's not a, yeah. You could logically bang them all together into one exe, you know. But
yeah, I had a proof of concept where I did that effectively. I had a build two different make files, and one of them would compile the capabilities into a single executable. And then the other one would compile into three different executables.
Yeah, and for, you know, and,
so ahead, Steve.
I was just going to say for a single node deployment, you know, it sort of makes sense. You get nice, you've got a pluggable IPC, you know, it works really quickly. It's one thing to run, but, you know, not in all cases, so.
So let me maybe come back to the, I mean, I know, you know, when I was at Dell and Trevor was working on this concept, we had some ideas about why, and a lot of it went back to, you know, thin edge and that kind of stuff. Let's break down what's the reason for us to think we want to move to combining services. Maybe driving at a goal of behind this helps us to understand when and where this gets accomplished.
Simplicity and potentially performance. Although, you know, I think to make the change without knowing whether or not it performs better is probably short-sighted. So, you know, if you've got, if core metadata, right? I mean, if core command has to talk to core metadata all the time and you combine them, right? There's no more IPC. It's all done within a single process. So you could get performance benefits out of that. Then again, it could perform better with them separate, depending on the workload on the two. So.
But my understanding that really was.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Maureen.
I'm thinking with Go routines, it shouldn't affect performance. I mean, it should only improve performance because it's multi-threaded.
Yeah, but it really comes down to, Malini, whether or not you're basically doing inter-process communication or not. IPC is expensive when you have to, like, send a message from one process to another process, whereas if they're both in the same process,
mm-hmm. So the point is performance should improve when we bring them all together.
In theory, but again, if you've got a multi-processor system, sometimes IPC can be advantageous. Depends on how much IPC is happening between the two processes. So again, I would say, like, our, if we want to do this, I think maybe we should be able to, like, build it both ways and actually do the performance calculations. It's like, is this actually a benefit or not?
So let me ask this question. Simplicity, I certainly get that. I mean, you know, fewer services, fewer deployment issues, all that kind of stuff on a performance basis. And, you know, we were thinking about this at Dell, the inter-process communication reduction. But how much inter-process communication is now going on, especially as we're getting ready to do things like remove value descriptor? We've put the data type in the reading. The amount of inter-process communication, isn't that going down considerably anyway? So is this still a chief concern?
You can't tell without benchmarking. That's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, no, I get where you're going in terms of we need to measure before we do it. What I'm asking.
What Deanna did is long ago, she and Trevor were talking a lot about, you know, devices and profiles and sharing profiles and stuff like that. And we did some experiments. Based on what we had, then we found like a 66% reduction in storage requirements and, you know, all the parsing and the intercommunication when we made things lighter. And that'll go down even further if they're all in the same thing, because you don't need to have multiple calls to the database. You can have a cache of all your systems and then refer to them. So there are multiple ways you'll have savings.
Right. You know. I guess, you know, we still haven't made the changes, though, like getting device profiles out of devices, right?
Actually, Deanna did that on an experimental branch, and we got 66% reductions.
Right. So I hope that gets done for Hanoi, right? We want to make,
it can't. It's probably going to be a backward incompatible change.
Aren't we removing V1 in Hanoi?
No.
We're not. So V2 will be out, but V1 will still be supported. But if you use V2...
First of all, I don't know if that's a true statement, Trevor. I'm not saying that we won't, but I think we certainly would have V2 in place, at least that's my hope, by Hanoi, so that we could get rid of V1.
Well, that's a commitment you guys are making then, because in all the discussions we've had around V2, we have not put an end date in place. We've said it's going to take as long as it takes, and we're going to play with it and make sure that it's something that, you know, we like before we eliminate V1. So
that's fair.
I personally don't think you're going to release it at the end of the Hanoi cycle. It'll be there in some capacity, but I don't think it'll be the.
Well, this is a great discussion. If we're not going to do that, I still think we should change the internal data models so that if you use V2, you get the benefits, right?
Right. And so that's why we had the discussion around separate persistence so that we could do that. V1 would continue to use the old data models, and V2 will use the new ones.
Okay, so let's go back to this conversation and close this out. So performance, I definitely get both what Malini and Tony are saying. Hey, performance, before you do anything performance-wise, it should be backed up by fact and by statistics. And it sounds like we've got some on the part of people like Trevor and Diana who may have done a little bit, but we'd really want to know more about that that and really research that before we put that as the goal that's going to drive this. And in terms of simplicity, are we back to a user story? I mean, from my perspective, I don't have users coming to us saying, good God, you guys got so many services. I really like to see the number of services be reduced at this point. I get the fact that it does help in terms of simplicity, but I don't see that as being the key most important driver on the part of a user community yet.
I thought the motivation for the combining of services was more due to our boot up process, from us internally looking at our boot up process and needing all these multiple microservices made it seem like it was complicated, or there was too many there. Was there a way of doing this better? And hence a reason for combining microservices together. And my humble opinion on the performance thing, I have a hard time buying into performance when we're doing REST calls between microservices, because to me, all bets are off on performance. If you're doing deployments of things broad and far, it's really hard to buy into supporting a large stack like that. So to me, that we're not even having real performance discussions unless we do more of an analysis of how the data actually flows to the system to figure out where we need to optimize, and that makes better sense. So that's sort of a vote for having facts rather than just speculation.
You mean like tracing via a correlation ID, being able to visualize service interactions and measure latency? Fantastic.
Okay. So what I'm going to draw as a conclusion of this, and you could tell me all if you think I'm wrong, is that while there is still on the table the idea that at some point in the future we may want to combine services, we still don't have explicit evidence to tell us that there is a real performance need. And even if we did have a performance need, how best to address that. And from a simplicity standpoint, yes, there could be some simplicities, but is that a driving goal or one that we should be focusing on right now? And I'm hearing, maybe not. So while I think this is something we still continue to look at and research, and we keep it on the roadmap to something to consider in the future, doesn't sound like to me like this is something that's rising to a level of concern right now that we should be addressing it. Anybody take exception to that? Fair enough. Okay, gang. So I'm going to try to kind of draft up a statement about, you know, our considerations here that we just discussed. I'll listen intently to the recording again, make sure I get the words right, and I'll put that at the top of kind of our Hanoi planning. We'll make sure that's distributed here, obviously, to everybody through the TSC shortly after the meeting here this week, so we can make sure we get that wording down correctly. And that kind of helps to guide the rest of the planning. With that, is everybody okay if we go ahead and start talking about Hanoi planning in the various areas? Given what we have chatted about today, hopefully that sets the context for some of these decisions. Anybody need to talk about anything else before we get into Hanoi planning? Okay, fair enough. What I would like to try to do with everybody's consideration, if you're okay with it, is put, just like we did for the last pre-wire meeting, put these into buckets as we go down through this massive list. Is it in consideration? That does not mean it is in the Hanoi release. It is only that it is to be considered as part of our Hanoi planning meeting. It's out of scope, which does not mean it is out of scope forever. It just means that we have considered it and it is at least not going to go in Hanoi. We're not even gonna probably talk about it at the Hanoi planning meeting. And then there's one other bucket I would like to see if we can do with some of these things, and that is, let's get rid of it forever. Either we've talked about it enough and it's never gonna happen, or maybe it's overcome by events. Whatever the case might be, if there are particular items in this list that we're just sick of talking about or just otherwise feel it doesn't belong in our roadmap at any place anymore, if we could get rid of it, I would appreciate it. Is that fair? Or does anybody have any other categories or other considerations we need to do as we go through this list? All right. Hearing none, what I thought we'd do is we kind of start with the general cross-cutting concerns. I can lead that one. And then as we go to each group, I'd like the work group leads for each of these areas to kind of lead that discussion, in particular because there might be some finer points about some of the bullets here you want to make that that I don't have notes on. Is everybody okay with that? Okay, I've put here release 2.0, question. Obviously, that is a big question. And to Trevor's point, if I've jumped the gun in assuming that V2 API is there and V1 is out, that would obviously mean it has to be a 2.0. But if we're keeping both, then that might be a 1.3. So we'll just leave that as a question right now, trying to answer that, not trying to steer that. So we'll leave that aside. In terms of the what's in, what's out. First thing, hopefully this one is an easy one to start with. Go 1.15. Is that something we still want to consider? It should be out. I think it's due out based on what I was reading in the August timeframe.
Yep, that's correct. So it's definitely something we should consider, looking at the language features. And I personally think we should adopt it just to stay current, but okay. I would say yes.
I'd say yes too, but right. I would evaluate whether or not we maybe take advantage of some of the new features, but definitely move to 1.15.
Agree.
So I think our Golang changes should be A, driven by, right, if we've got a new feature that relies on it. But the second thing to consider is that each major Go release is supported until there are two major releases that have come out after it. So we should probably always be staying on top of that. So if 1.15 comes out, then I think that means we should move to 1.15 because 1.13 isn't supported or considered stable anymore.
Okay, so it is in. It sounds like Mike, I think it was Mike Johansson was speaking up, you know, are there features out there we should take advantage of? Could we task somebody or would somebody be willing to do a little bit of research into what they are reading out there about 1.15 and tell us at the Hanoi planning if there are particular features that we think we should have some interest in. In other words, do a little bit of feature research and find out if there's some things there that already look attractive. Would anybody be willing to kind of do that research?
I'm going to volunteer, Anthony.
Yeah, and we might want to think about like whether or not there are any things that change in 1.15 that might impact this as well. Not necessarily features we take advantage of.
Assuming this also includes 1.14 as well, because to look at both.
That's a great question, Anthony. What I've been reading is it's almost like they're skipping over 1.14. I don't know if that's because it isn't hitting any bells or if there was some issue. Does anybody know about that?
Looking at it now, it doesn't look like there's much in here to the language. I think there's like one thing with interface types and that really doesn't, it's not that much.
But it's released, right?
Yeah. Is it released or to be released?
It's no, out. There's 1.14.1. Okay. But okay. It looks like it's just bug fixes.
Yeah, it's compiler and runtime efficiencies mostly.
Okay. So Anthony, thankfully your boss has volunteered you. We welcome your participation. Thank you very much for that. So that is on our possibly in, and Anthony will bring us a report at the planning meeting to let us know what he's seeing there in terms of 1.15 and 1.14. Message bus between selective services. I think we've narrowed this down to between device service and core, unless I'm missing something. Is that something we want to consider?
I thought it was device services and app service.
That's already there.
Yeah.
Oh, device service to app service. Yes, you're right.
Yep. So you want to go directly and bypass. If we do that, that means we already have to think about core as a support service, not as a main service. So that implies that that feature has to be there right away.
Well, I guess this... If you were to turn off persistence in core, you'd be getting basically the same thing by bypassing core, right?
Gotcha.
Yeah, the only thing that you get by going through core is the optional value descriptor right. Validation.
Okay, so let me put it this way and see if we can... looking at message bus between, let's call it device service core, application service, Is that something we, it sounds like everybody's in agreement. We want to at least consider that, whether or not it's just device service to core, device service to app service, whether or not core is now supporting all part of that argument. Is anybody against exploration of that and possibly putting that in scope? Okay, so we're in agreement that this is something we want to consider. Do we want to consider device service to core to application service as part of that discussion, or just device service to app?
I think going device to data to app is pointless.
Right. Okay. So I think the option there is for core to listen and grab it and put it in the database. I think it's the option.
That's right. The core is a subscriber to your bus, right, and it can persist stuff, and it's an optional piece. That's exactly how I see it, Lenny.
Yeah, agreed. And we could, you know, we might not have to do that in Hanoi. We do that right after, you know, if that was something people were really looking for.
Yeah, we could talk about implementation details as we get to Hanoi, but it sounds like we're in agreement that this is, that this part so far is in.
Yeah. And then, again, like the core would be a core data would be a stretch goal, optional subscriber.
Okay. Do we have to worry then about picking a broker? Are we going brokerless? Are we doing this over 0MQ? Is that something we have to consider? Well, we obviously have to consider because we have to figure out what the implementation has to be behind that. But would that be something we want to put as part of the planning? Is what is the implementation of the messaging capability behind the implementation?
I think there should be a default. Sorry, I'll go for default implementation of MQTT. At the hackathons, everyone used MQTT to access everything. So,
but then that forces into yet another third-party dependency.
So I'll throw something out there. So right now, I'm kind of got off a little bit, but I'm working on adding support for Redis streams, which allows for communication on both sides, you know, basically a message broker, but it's something that we already support. So I don't know if that would be something that we consider. It's still in the works, so there's really nothing to look at, but.
So let's do this. It sounds like there's enough conversation back and forth here that at least people are saying, well, I think we should go MQTT, that would be brokered. We can use Redis Stream, that would also be brokered, but it's implementation that we already have. But everybody is saying, well, this should be part of the conversation, part of the planning. Let's let the implementation come out as part of that planning, and we'll send somebody some items here. But I don't hear anybody saying, no, let's use the infrastructure we have.
So as far as I understood, 0MQ, the big problem was on Windows. Is it a problematic on other platforms besides Windows?
Well, it's just building on Windows. Well, running on...
It can run on Windows, and you can build on Windows. It's just cantankerous.
Right. But the point I wanted to make here, I don't think doing this requires us to go brokerless or broker. I think it's still a choice.
And that's fine. Again, that comes down to implementation, but there...
No, I meant a configuration, because we have a... I mean, if somebody wants to stick with ZMQ and not have the broker in there, that they should be able to still do that with this.
So you're just saying, Lenny, that there's one more option here. It doesn't have to be one or the other. It could be both.
Yeah.
And do we have that capability today, Lenny? Like, can you configure EdgeX to use MQTT today without any changes?
It's in there, yes. I haven't got it to work with core yet with my app service configurable listening.
Okay, so I'm going to put this in scope two, that we're talking about what the implementation is. Again, this is not deciding. It's just what's in scope, and it sounds like there's enough discussion here. We probably need to conclude that as part of our design and planning part. Do we need to think about this in both asynchronous and synchronous modes?
No, I think right now we just use our existing message bus implementation.
So that is out of scope. Okay.
And does that message bus implementation, do you basically provide the mechanics for request response?
No.
You don't?
It's fire and forget.
Fire and forget, yep. So there is no... Go ahead, Mike. Right.
If you consider broker, do we care about HA again? Because then you kind of have a single point of failure. you know, I don't know. It's just another implication of going with a brokered message bus.
I'm not sure there's a point inside of EdgeX today that there's a single point of failure. So I think we're adding to the list, but point taken. Yeah. Well, let's do this. I think we've got enough to say this is a great topic and one that we want to consider in scope potentially. Can we assign somebody to kind of start to lay out what they view this would look like? Not in all the gory details, because that would actually happen through the Hanoi, but in gross tasks, we believe what we want to do for Hanoi is fill in the blank. We're going to provide device service to application, a message bus support. It will be optionally brokered or not. I mean, you put in the finer points as you'd like, but kind of do a little bit of sketching out what this would look like to bring that to the table as a planning item for Hanoi. Somebody want to volunteer for that? No, don't everybody.
Sorry, I was talking on mute. Yeah, I can take that one.
Thanks, Lenny. So I've got Lenny down for this. Actually, I'll put you up here. Okay. On to the next. Support running a service on a different host other than a server. So this is coming down to that HA, high availability, distributed. And what I think I'm hearing from our earlier conversations is what would be in scope is device services as, how would I put this, as standalone distributed service. Which means we've got now security questions.
Yeah, it's really all about security because I can do this right now if I don't worry about security.
Good point. Yeah. Is that a fair statement or a fair summary, everybody? That really is it's all about how we cover the security between on that REST communication between device services. And well, if we do this, Lenny, now all of a sudden you've got another interesting aspect to the security question.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's also orchestration, though, like things, you know, it's more than just security, but security is the biggest issue.
So you're saying now we have to have multiple compose files or something, Tony? Oh, yeah. Or?
Well, you would, right? A single compose file is not going to start a container on another machine.
Right, you got to have your device service only compose file that you run on that other machine.
Yep. Or you don't, you just tell somebody, well, we're bringing up the rest of EdgeX. Now you figure out how to deploy and orchestrate that device service wherever you need to. Because I can't imagine that if you decide to run the device service off on some very limited resource system, I'm guessing that may or may not even have Docker compose on it at that point, but points are taken.
Could be native, could be Snap. You know, there are many ways to deploy that.
So. Yeah, we at least have to have a statement about how that's going to be handled, even if it's you're on your own. Okay. Is this what we consider to be in scope for planning? The rest of it obviously deferred per our earlier conversation. Is that fair?
Yes. Last one.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Anybody want to take a shot at this for planning, or is this something that needs any more research before we get to that? It's just a matter of whether or not we consider this to be in scope or not, and who we assign this to, which working group. It is a cross-cutting concern. That's my only worry here, is that you know, it's going to require multiple groups to kind of get involved in this.
Say device services with consultation from security.
Yeah, I thought Brian already had something sort of on play with regards to the security part.
Yep. It's got, I think it's option B is what we've been calling it. Okay. So let's just leave it at that, that we'll consider, we'll get to the Hanoi planning. We'll talk more about this. I guess my only question to you all, does anybody feel like we have to do more research in advance of the planning meeting on this before we can make some decisions?
Again, I think we should make sure that, right, in device services, we've all like looked at what the proposal is for, you know, Brian's proposal for security and understand it. So when we go into the meeting at the end of the month, everybody's on the same page. I think the one tricky thing with security is just the distribution of the fault tokens, right, to process on another machine.
I think if we start off with giving this device service a certificate, I mean, or at least tell it the certificate or the proxy, from then on we can get the rest running. Like, it's a bootstrap stuff.
And Brian, am I correct? That was option B, I think, is what you've been calling that option, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I made a whole other slide deck to kind of explain that option in detail, but yeah, you can go ahead and refer to that if you'd like. And yes, I think I'll have to look at device services explicitly, you know, because the option B proposal was essentially for microservice communication in general. And if we just want to do it from one microservice, there should be some analysis of, you know, what are the particular communication paths that we're trying to secure? You know, what are the particular concerns for device services?
So Brian, are you okay with me putting you on that task, is to just refine whatever you've got to be that one device service specific and to send that out via the TSC emailer to everyone?
Well, sure. Wait a minute. I'm confused. Are we saying that we only want to do service-to-service security when one of the services is on another box?
More specifically, only device service to the rest of EdgeX.
Okay, so the statement is then we trust all service-to-service communication that's happening on a single box.
Mm-hmm.
We look to only do the secure communication when the device service is on another box.
Right.
So let's, that comes down to this, right? So yes. Service-to-service communication as one of the new features from a security perspective, we've already said that yes, to device services, to core or application services now.
When distributed.
Yep. So the question is, do we want to do it for all?
Well, depending on what I find, it might just basically, depending on, I don't know how many different microservices device services talks to. It may end up being all, right?
So let's do this. Again, this is not the design implementation planning. This is just what's in scope. Brian, to give us more of a readout on that.
Yep.
How's remember, that? There's the other two of command service talking to device service.
Yeah, is that something we support, Jim? When we do this distributed device service? I think that gets...
So that goes back to this. So it's not only questions on security. It is security, but it's also security relevant to device service to core and command to device service.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Go ahead.
I was just saying that's a good point, command back to device service and making sure it can route and the security on it.
Brian, do you know, maybe you can already tell us, did your plan already kind of theorize about that, or is that the part you kind of have to also look at?
My plan was just generic microservice to microservice communication, not looking at which particular, and so this task is to look at the what other services would be affected if we wanted to distribute device services, to see if there is a way to do this at a lower scope, or whether it would essentially require the securing all the services or not.
Okay. Yeah, so it sounds like we're kind of back the same. This is in potentially in scope. Brian, to give us a readout specifically around device services and the communication to core and command to device services. Let's kind of wait for that to make some determinations at the planning meeting.
And Brian, I can help you with that if you need help on the device service part.
Sure, absolutely. I'll take help.
Wow, I'm going to put Tony down. Thanks, both. Okay, good deal. Let's see, where are we at? I got 9 minutes after the hour game. Do people need a quick break here before we finish up the last hour?
Yes, please.
Yes, please. There goes the bathroom bell. Why don't we take a quick break here, gang? Should we break until quarter after the hour? So give you about 6-7 minutes. Is that fair?
Sounds good.
All righty. Alrighty, everybody. By the way, again, just as a reminder, everybody, we don't have to get through this whole list here in the next 45 minutes. We do meet again tomorrow where we'll try to get through a lot more of this, obviously. And tomorrow's meeting, just as a reminder, is at, what time is that? It's going to be 12 noon Pacific time. I'll let you do the translation for your own time. I also know that's 8 p.m. UK time. So appreciate folks having to stay up late there. Okay, let's see, moving on. So I think we've talked about the first few of these generic issues. Improving EdgeX resiliency in the face of non-availability or other resource service concerns. To me, this kind of goes to the high availability. So this would not be in scope for this release unless I hear otherwise. Anybody feel like this is one we do have to worry about?
Have we done any benchmarking to see where things fall over?
I could categorically it falls over all over the place. Is that fair, Tony?
Well, train. I know you love my trains, Jim.
I do.
again, this is another one of those without data, right? If we've got some data that says, core data is like blowing up under this load, we really need to fix something, or, zero MQ is falling over, then we should address it. But
yep. So that's why I mark it in yellow, not in scope for Hanoi, but we keep it out there. Anybody take exception to that? Same goes for the 12th factor. I think we keep it out there, but not in scope for discussions at Hanoi. Anybody exception with that? I think we've already beat the one on distributed microservices to death as well. So we keep it out there, but again, not in scope beyond what we've talked about with regard to device services. And Tony, this probably goes to your point. Do we have test environment playground to actually test things like high availability and distributed service environments once we do get to that point? So again, all that kind of goes off into future. So this has been one that's been out there for a little bit of time. I don't see this coming up for Hanoi. This is one where it kind of goes to a little bit of high availability distributed, but the idea would be that you could offload something on east and west, that maybe your service is getting bogged down. Could it point some of the device services off to another instance of core? To me, this is part and parcel of high availability and distributed concerns, and something we're certainly not ready for yet, unless anybody feels otherwise. Okay.
I guess I just ask kind of what that is. I mean, because it actually says, introduce a new category, sharing services for east-west data exchange with non-EdgeX entities. And I kind of feel like we have that with the message bus.
Right? Potentially.
If they want to hook up to our message bus and...
The original thought was that, this goes way, way back into the history. And the idea was that, let's say you have something like SMA or some service that's sitting off the side like that. And I think Trevor was calling an agent, and it's monitoring the status of some services. And it says, oh, look at that. Core data is really, really busy. What if I took the action to work with metadata, work with all the services to peel off some of the device services and point them to another instance of core data. Maybe it's even living on another gateway on another box. That was kind of the idea or the thought behind it. And that's why we said, sharing of services.
Right. And then
when we said non-EdgeX entities, well, the idea was, well, maybe that's some other type of edge platform. It doesn't always have to be EdgeX to do that work. But that would be a much larger scheme problem.
Yeah, that kind of begs the question, is our message bus a public API as opposed to sort of an internal API that can change at will? Because is that a certification point? If you're talking about third parties, is that a certifying point?
All good questions. And if we think maybe we need to make some clarifications in the roadmap about what we're thinking about with regard to this, I'm happy to do that. In fact, let me take that as a to-do.
I was going to suggest, you said earlier you wanted to start whittling down a list. So this was one of those ones where I'm like,
Okay.
So up to you what you want to do with it. I just don't hear like a super big demand for this concept right now. And it sounds like it is somewhat historical.
Is this the point in which third-party analytics services would hook in?
Potentially. I mean, to Tony's point, there's enough ambiguity here, and there's enough, well, that's way out there in the future. I'm okay by saying, hey, this is our first of the red line. Let's get rid of this damn thing because it doesn't have a lot of meaning to it. But I'm okay with that too. What are people's thoughts? Is this something we want to keep kind of in the memory and keep in the backlog, or, you know, when it really becomes real, it can resurface itself in a new form with some actual information behind it?
Yeah, strike it. It's too nebulous.
Yep.
I'm okay with that too. Whoops. Okay. Whoops. What this would go this way. Okay. With this next one. Meeting support, hackathon support kit. It's a bit nebulous. My feeling is I'm not sure, at least from, I'm gonna kind of put these together. Meetup support, I think, is, you know, being able to do something like have demo kits and stuff available for meetups. Same would go for hackathons. To me, I mean, I would love to be able to do this, but it's almost like on a case by case basis at this point. I don't know if we could put something together correctly to support everything, and I don't know that that's necessarily our job right now. But what do other people feel? What I'm saying is, I think this would goes red. I think we take this off. That yes, we want to be able to do that, but somebody come to me with a real meetup or a real hackathon, and let's figure out how to get it done, as opposed to try and do something generic here.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Whack that. Agreed. Okay. In the general, under technical debt, V2 API, anybody against this, I think, is obviously in scope. Our team in IoTeX is actually meeting this week to start to talk about the implementation, how we get it done, who's doing the work, things of that nature. So we should have a readout by the planning, maybe even have some of the work underway by that time. So I will put IoTeX on the map here as owning this for a readout. Anybody think, nope, the whole V2 API discussion is so overblown, I don't want to do this again, and we're going to just put that in red? Okay, that's good. I'm glad we're not hearing that. Deprecating Mongo, something we want to talk about. Is that potentially within scope for Hanoi? Do we leave it? Thoughts?
Are you going to have a migration path?
That would have to be part of the discussion. I would think if it is something we want to consider, that would have to be something we either put in or out of scope.
Well, no, I'm not saying the project should support that, but I know it was brought up earlier if we were going to have V1 versus V2 persistence. Now we're talking about whacking the database. Are vendors then going to be advised to create migration paths for their customers? Because now it's all got to be in Redis.
The good news for Autotech. We already do Redis, so our migration path ends with that.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, that's a vendor's responsibility.
Let me go back to the original question. So how many people think that eventually we just need to get rid of Mongo?
Yes.
Why? What's give me top three reasons, or top two reasons.
License.
Never-ending security issues.
Footprint. Support.
Performance.
Got enough, Tony.
Thank you, everybody. Sounds like we should deprecate Mongo.
I mean, I'll put it in the negative to make it an easier question. Anybody think we should keep Mongo long term? Okay, so that just means at what point do we decide to get rid of Mongo, which tells me it's in a planning potential for Hanoi.
Do we potentially mark it deprecated in Geneva? It's there, you can use it and pull it in Hanoi. Or do we think that's too premature?
I think we got enough on our plate to get things done for Geneva, and it doesn't seem to be a burning bridge item for Geneva. But then we can talk about in the Hanoi planning, what's our strategy? Do we just yank it in Hanoi, or do we, you know, deprecate it and mark it for the next release?
No. Tony's question is, should we do the marking of deprecation in Geneva?
Yeah, no actual change, right? We've already said Redis is a default in Geneva. Do we just in the release note say, by the way, Mongo is being deprecated. You can use it in Geneva, but we're going to pull it. It's not going to be available in Hanoi.
I like that deprecation process. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good thing.
Does the security work with Mongo yet, though?
Has to be done, I thought, for Geneva.
Sorry, with Redis. Redis doesn't run with the security yet.
But that's part of Geneva, isn't it?
It is, yep, but I think there's some struggles. Is Andre, let me check, is Andre on the line with us? I don't see Andre with us. I just read in the Slack channel message he was still struggling with that today, so that may be, so let's do this. I'm going to put deprecating Mongo as part of our planning, whether or not that actually goes into the Hanoi release, if we just mark it as deprecated. Let me get with...
Yeah, I mean, I think if we end up getting stuck on like fully secure Redis, then we rethink the decision.
Yeah, and based on if Andre is like, oh, this is looking less and less likely for Geneva, then I think we have to talk about that at the Hanoi release, and we can't mark yeah. Mongo deprecated yet because we've got right. issues there. Is that fair?
Yeah, totally.
And if Andre is like, yeah, this is just I'm slamming to get some things, but we'll get it in. Would anybody, if we are pretty sure that Andre is going to deliver on the goal and the team is going to deliver on the goal of Redis with secure database for Geneva, is there anybody against marking Mongo as deprecated as of Geneva?
No, okay. I guess the only other question I'll ask is, did anything ever happen with Go plugins? Like, are we completely abandoned the idea of being able to do multiple implementations? It's just not technically possible.
Yes.
Okay.
Plugins is dead. At least plugins is in the implementation that we're seeing now. I have heard some back channel messages that Go is thinking about other ways to do it, but that's way off in the distance.
Okay. Just wanted to check.
Let's at least get Redis striking up in the secure configuration before we decide to deprecate Mongo.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Jim, to get to Andre and discuss that. If there's no issues there, if that's going to come through, we'll mark Mongo deprecated only if Redis is ready to go. Is that fair, Brian?
Yep, that's perfect.
Okay. But we will have this discussion. Deprecation of Mongo is part of the planning. Does not mean that it's going to go in with Hanoi. It just means that it'll be part of our planning. Removal of value descriptors in favor of the data type of reading. The data type is already in the reading, but the idea there is doing some refactoring to kind of get rid of the whole value descriptor, break it into its pieces and parts. Yes, as part of planning?
Well, it depends, right? If we keep V1 around, don't we need to keep value descriptors around?
Yes, that's the idea that we've been talking about with this, is that V2 would remove them and V1 would continue to have them.
Okay, so we have a larger discussion about
V1, V2.
Yeah.
Well, really V1, right? Does V1 live in Hanoi or not?
Okay. So I'm going to mark that as in our planning discussions. Obviously, the answers to those questions will determine what we do there. We just need to make that as part of our consideration.
And Jim, I think like in that same bucket, right, is that devices, right, with the embedded device profiles and also addressable.
No, there is no addressable.
What's that?
The addressable has been removed from devices.
Not from a device, just from EdgeX.
Oh, Ajax.
Yeah, completely.
Okay. Yeah, if we're going to keep V1 around, a lot of these points become moot, right? We got to keep everything pretty much the same until we get to a 2.0 place and which we could deprecate all these things. So I'll just mark that as all part of the same conversation. Implementation of generic handling. Trevor, Anthony, I know you guys have brought this up a couple of times. Is this something we can even do independent of V2, or is this part and parcel of V2?
The original proposal was separate from V2. It was to be done in V1, and there were some preliminary steps that I'm aware of that were taken along these lines. But I think as part of V2, what we were trying to do was take a different approach to how we handled errors. And I do think that, I don't think, this is my personal opinion, I don't think some wholesale error refactoring is going to happen in V1. I think it's going to get pushed down the list. So I think that when the implementation for V2 comes along, if there are improvements to the error handling, they should be comprehensive and spread throughout the API.
So I'm hearing this is on the table for discussion, but not for Hanoi. Let's wait until we get the whole V1, V2 issue solved. There may be some minor tweaking we do is good refactoring for everything we do with every release, but this is a major error handling refactoring, not something we're going
to
consider.
It needs to be defined. I mean, generic error handling. Okay, what does that mean?
Sure.
Yep. And we've also got, other issues that are currently in EdgeX Go about, how do we wrap errors? How do we sanitize errors to prevent, security concerns leaking? So this is a whole discussion. And I just don't see it in V1. I think it's more of a V2 thing.
Okay. Anybody take exception to that? So it's still on the roadmap, but not part of the Hanoi planning. Develop process for securely vetting of third-party components. Part of Hanoi, deferred.
Is this vetting for new components?
Yep.
Yes.
You bring in a new library. Is it fit for purpose? Is it okay to bring in? Today, we just let developers bring in whatever they want. It's part of the review process of the code base, but unless somebody catches something or takes some exception with it, nothing else occurs.
So do we, as part of this, do we also want to do an actual review?
Develop a process, I take, would mean part of that, or potentially, again, This is whether or not we're going to consider this as part of the Hanoi scope considerations or not. Doesn't mean we solve it today. Do we want to talk about this? Is this something we're like, well, it is important, but not going to happen right away?
I think it's something we absolutely have to do. I don't think it's tied to any release.
So, well, does the security group have bandwidth to start this process?
I'm saying like it goes beyond, I'll leave that up to Malini and Ting Yu to respond to
I
that.
I think we should do it, yeah.
But I think we should do it, right? And it shouldn't be tied to a release.
So we should do it, but is this something we want to, we don't have to say we're doing it. Do we want to discuss this at the Hanoi planning about whether or not this is going to be in scope or not for Hanoi? Or are you like, nope, our plate's too full. There isn't any way in hell we're going to get to this during the next 6 months.
I don't think we can continue to just punt it. So yeah, maybe this is worth discussing it at our virtual.
Who do we want on point on that then? Because I think if we are going to discuss that, we kind of have to start to put our arms around how big that is, what that would start to look like as to whether or not we consider that as part of this upcoming release. And I guess I look specifically, Malini, Ting Yu, do you guys have somebody in security you can put on this?
I'll sign Diana up.
But I think each of the working groups should...
Sure.
To help
us,
right?
Sure. And it's more like who's the developer is going to bring in some new package, and they should kind of alert the security team and be ready to start leading and discussing. It's a joint process.
Right. I don't think we want to make it super heavyweight, but I think it's like when somebody reviews code and there's a new package import, right? There's a process everybody follows, and whoever reviews that PR should know what the process is as well.
Yeah, I think it should be before that. I mean, it's when the developer realizes that there's a package that isn't being used, which means the hard part there is I'm in a module and I'm bringing in a package new to that module, but is it really new to EdgeX? It's all part of developing how we handle this process.
Okay, so we've got Diana on point. Is Diana in the meeting?
No.
Beautiful, Malini. I love it. Who else you got on your team, Malini? Let's start tasking them.
It's just the two of us now.
So,
hey, Jim, I think it's okay just put my name there so we can just bring into the secret working group for discussion.
Okay, we can drop Diana, so, then I feel nicer.
Well, I'll leave Tingyu and Diana there and then get some inputs from the work group. But the idea is that come the planning meeting that you guys provide some sort of high-level idea about what this process would start to look like, and then we could discuss about whether or not that goes into development. Really.
Along these same lines is licensing. Like, Mike Johansson caught one of these things. Like, there was a library that Alex had pulled in into the CLI and said, wait a minute, let's use another one because its license is better. So both are good things.
I will let you guys put that as part of your considerations there. Okay.
Is that on our list, Jim? We had for the architectures meeting, that whole, you know, concept of whether or not we should be copying licenses into containers.
I took that as a discussion about whether a review, when you're looking at a library, review of its license and figure out whether or not that library and its licensing is suited for EdgeX, not a how do we distribute the license information for that, which I think is what you're talking about, Tony.
Yep, I'm just saying that triggered that. I know that was on our list for architectures, so maybe we should just include that in discussion.
I thought I had that down here, but let's do this.
Okay, if you're sorry, there, fine. I just wanted to make sure
I'll capture it now because I think that is something. I think it's in our on our list to do in the architects meeting, but let me do this. License file distribution with artifacts, and I'll put that in scope for planning if we don't cover this.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Because that was one of the topics coming up in the next architects meeting. Okie dokie. Restructuring of compose files, take advantage of overrides. Lenny had brought this up, and I know he's already doing some work. Anybody feel like this is something that we should not do as part of our planning? It seems to me this is a pretty straightforward one and one that we should be taking advantage of given the multiple compose files we've got out there now. Anybody against moving this into consideration for Hanoi? In other words, can I mark this green? Okay, hearing none, we will consider that. Lenny, you've done some work in this area, right?
Yes, we've done. So I can put together a little demo.
Okay, with that, we have covered the general topics, both new features and technical debt. Are we ready to move on to core? And let me see here. We got about 20 minutes. Trevor, would you like to start to take a whack at core here? I know we got a lot. We probably won't get through all of core in the 20 minutes, but do you want to cover new features or technical debt first?
I think a lot of these new features require some unpacking, so maybe the technical debt.
Okay.
Is the best thing. We've already talked about the tests with the race argument, so you know, we said that we were going to be looking into this. I think we should include it for Hanoi, but if we have an opportunity to do it on the repos, like the modules and things like that, prior to that in Geneva, then you know.
Sure. Well, it might be OBE by then, but that'd be a great thing.
So that next one is redundant.
Just a little bit of information on why we backed out of this that decision within the CI/CD pipelines, and we ran into the issue where Alpine really was the issue. You know, we're using Alpine based build images, And the scope of work for within, you know, Geneva would have required DevOps to go back and refactor the way that we're, you know, building with either a Debian or a Ubuntu-based build image. And we didn't want to take on that additional scope. So I'm fine if we want to, you know, move, you know, towards something like that in Hanoi, but I don't think we can pull it in for Geneva.
Okay, so there's the gating factor then. So we'll just say, yeah, just call it Hanoi then.
Okay.
Do you want to put that on there? Or?
It's on the list. It's in green. It's going to be discussed for Hanoi. So that, okay. That we've got, unless you have something else you want there, Trevor?
No, that's fine. This next one, some member of the security team is going to have to speak to this one.
Okay, so this is mine. So I do have a proposal out there. Needs to be some minor tweaks made to it to bring it up to date. I do have some code out there to add hooks for encryption of the Vault Master key from a from what I call a secret seed that would be provided through some secure mechanism. And I've also been working on some in code that won't be upstreamed to do a TPM-based binding of that secret seed to encrypt that key. I've not gotten, at this point, it's just me proposing that. There haven't been a lot of other eyes on that. But I've made some good progress on enabling this to happen.
So I guess maybe I'm trying to understand this at a higher level, Brian. Are we talking about essentially outfitting some sort of abstraction so that the master key is in some sort of hardware root of trust?
Well, what it is that the problem is that the Vault Master key is stored plain text on disk. Mm-hmm. And then the solution is to encrypt that key. And I have the code ready to encrypt that key. I just need to do some software secure development lifecycle stuff before I can submit that for a public PR.
Why are we discussing this as part of core? Wouldn't this be part of security and all services, kind of a cross-cutting concern?
Yeah, it does belong in security. Yeah.
Okay.
The next bullet too.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. So if you don't mind, can I defer these?
Sure.
To security here. So let me go down here. Is this new feature or really technical debt?
That's new feature.
Yeah. Okay. Because I do want to cover them, but I want to cover them in the context of everything we might be doing in security there.
Sure. I'll hold off on that.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Yep. Trevor.
So this goes back to the discussion that we were having before. Right now, what core command used to do is it didn't have a persistence layer, and it would ask core metadata for everything, which meant service-to-service calls for every operation that core command needed to undertake. So what Diana and I did is we actually said, well, that's ridiculous. Let's point core command directly at the database. And there is shared data between some of the catalogs in Mongo that core metadata and core command use. But I would suggest that we not take any additional steps on this because for one thing, again, we're looking at sunsetting the V1 API, having a V2 API, which is going to have a different persistence layer if I get my way. So I think this is probably just something that we continue to live with for now. Cause I don't see the V1 API being, having long longevity if we're talking about V2. So I would just leave this the way it is.
I mean, another way to do this too, also is the combining of the two services, which we talked about earlier.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. To me, this is the one that stands out that. Because microservices shouldn't share a database, so combining them would fix that.
That's true, but we can't do that without backward compatibility.
Right, but in Hanoi, yeah, when we get there.
That's why I think this is probably better solved just in V2. So then you could ask the question, you know, do we take on the scope of combining metadata and command for V2?
Yes.
Yep.
It, as long as it's not viewed as too large of an uplift for the community when we do the V2 API, that we don't get the feedback of, oh, we did too much in V2 API.
Well, if it's favorable, one thing that has to happen right out of the gate is to change the Swagger documents to reflect that. Because right now there's two different documents, one for metadata and one for command. And so then the capabilities and DTOs from that command document will need to be folded into metadata. So maybe as part of the Hanoi planning, we'll get a decision on that. And then we can take the action item to adjust the Swagger. But in the meantime, if IoTech is going to take a stab at V2, it's probably not a good idea to start with command. Probably start with metadata. Use so that.
It sounded to me more and more like this is 1.3.
Yes, I totally think that's what's going
to
happen.
Because what I keep hearing is, well, there are these other things. In addition to the APIs, there are these other things we want to do, and that's going to be a non-backward. And trying to do that all in 6 months seems to me to be less and less likely. Does anybody take exception to that?
No, well, that's based on the work for V2, right?
Yeah, I mean, I, if it was just about changing out the APIs to go, you know, to from V1 to V2, you know, that we are there are going to be some non-backward compatible changes just getting to those V2 APIs, things like DTOs and such. But there's a lot more in it than what we're talking about that we want, you know, potentially combining services, some other changes we want that are going to be non-backward compatible. I don't see that happening all in 6 months, but somebody correct me if you think I'm wrong.
Well, then we do, if we make it a 1.3, do we consider it an LTS release? We just keep pushing off, like, we just keep changing so much constantly. When do we slow down to change? Do we wait till 2.0, like the Ireland release?
Okay, so let me, we're back to a kind of a general concern here. We, if you look at what's in Geneva right now, there isn't, we've made a lot of progress and we've done a lot of work. I don't mean to cast dispersions on anybody, but if you look at the list of features that we're putting in for Geneva, it's not huge. In Hanoi, if we have a V2 API that's experimental, that would obviously be a big thing. But in terms of additional things, if we do something like with messaging, that could be a big feature. But again, one could make the argument that maybe it's time to think about making either Geneva or Hanoi, if they are still 1.0 versions, to make those LTS. They will have been out there now essentially with the same APIs for over a year.
Right, but I mean, if Hanoi is going to be 1.3, I think it doesn't make sense to have Geneva be an LTS release, because we're basically saying they're compatible, right? So maybe we target Hanoi for being that LTS release, and then 2.0 comes out as Ireland, and it might take a cycle or two to get to a stable version on 2.0.
So is it worth putting discussion around which version is LTS as part of our planning meeting?
Yes.
Or are people like, nope, I don't want to be talking about LTS until we have a V2.
Jim, I didn't understand why you brought up 1.3 now when we are talking about combining services.
What I'm saying is that we're not going to do things like combining services until we get to a version 2.0. And we can't get to a version 2.0 until we have the V2 APIs in place. Plus, there's a lot of other things we want to do when we make that change to 2.0. I don't see us getting all that done by fall of this year. So in my mind, there's no way that Hanoi becomes a 2.0.
Got it.
And then Tony's follow on is, well, if Hanoi's not a 2.0, then when are we ever going to get to an LTS?
So that begs
the question, okay, are we ready to start talking about an LTS on one of the 1.0 releases?
And I guess, I mean, the other way to think about it is not just LTS, long-term support, but like, are we ever going to stop changing everything, right? I mean, people are building POCs on this, and it's like every release, like, configuration keys change or APIs change. So at some point we need to say, all right, enough's enough. We've got this. Let's move forward with, you know, and maybe that's, you know, I don't know if it's
maybe that's never going to happen.
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to be mean about it, but maybe that's never going to happen. Maybe that's just the state of software and the state of things are that we're never going to get to that kind of stability.
I think then we're not doing, then we're doing something wrong. I mean, at some point, I think it is possible to stabilize a product. Like Kubernetes doesn't change their APIs every release now.
So okay, so going back to the discussion on planning, because we're probably not going to solve this religious argument today. is LTS on a 1.x release something we want to talk about at the Hanoi planning? Is anybody against the consideration of a 1.x release of EdgeX to be under LTS? Okay.
I have one question. If we combine services, couldn't we still keep those API endpoints the same? I mean, how does it matter how it is behind the scenes implemented?
Well, your API would include the service name or port or both. And so if you're combining those, at least one of them would have to change, Melini. Unless you want to have two service names pointing to the same service, that gets ugly.
That's an implementation detail, right?
You're talking about the host name or the service name.
Right? Yeah. Port. And port. Don't forget there's port too.
I could have the two ports point inside behind to the same thing, but they're really implemented as one service. Trevor, what do you think?
If they're implemented as one service now, you suddenly have capabilities that are exposed on one port that weren't there before. The config that I'm asking for now looks different than it used to look for if I'm instrumenting that through some kind of service management capability.
Yeah, I agree. It's a breaking, you know, combining them again is another way of breaking compatibility.
Okay.
It's a major configuration change.
I think to your point, Melanie, could it be done so it was a non-backward compatible? Possible. It seems like an awful lot of work just to keep backward compatibility. Is there something that would drive that? Is there something you're thinking that would drive that?
Just like, you know, we're going to get maybe better performance. We're going to be more like microservices, aren't sharing databases. So that was the thought process there.
Okay.
But then I didn't want to have to change the API. And then this would then address your other question, like, are we trying to do too much in one release? So that was where the head was going.
Yeah, I'm going to leave this as yellow for now, gang. I think we need to have a discussion on the V2 API and the planning around that. I think if we bring this in, we're just really, really killing ourselves. And we haven't really had a great track record of trying to do all these things in one release. We have a hard enough time getting some of the things out that we say that we're going to get out. So I'm going to leave it there unless other people really take exception to that. But always open to inputs. Trevor, last item of technical debt.
I'm not sure what this means for events. Restructure the Redis DB client for events. What kind of events?
Well, there's an issue I created a while ago. I'm not speaking why it's here, if it should be here, but the issue was that there in core, we're basically using three different types of events, and it's kind of a mess. There's the one that's in GoMark core contracts, there's one within the package, the common package in EdgeX Go, and then there's one specific to Redis, and it kind of just all jumbled which one you use, which point in time for when you're interacting with Redis. So some of the functions return one version of it, some return another version of it. It's kind of a mess.
Anthony, question. When you say event, are you talking about the event model?
Yes.
Sorry. Okay. So basically the container for readings.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks.
And if you're looking at say the flow that goes from the REST API all the way down to the implementation that uses Redis, you're looking at three different structures for an event. and it's all kind of intermingled how which one's being used, and it's kind of a mess.
Yeah, so the DB clients have a contract that kind of mimics the models. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that, and then when you go further into the Redis implementation, there's another version of it, which is, it's basically the problem is within Redis. And we have a specific type called Redis event.
So is this really just some refactoring cleanup we need to get with Andre on, or is this really a task of technical debt that extends deep into core that we need to chat with a lot of people about, Anthony?
Probably could just be isolated to just core that doesn't require a lot of communication between a lot of people. Andre could probably help clean this up because it's like Lenny was saying, this is all, there's interfaces and contracts that handle how that we everything sits behind the database. I think it's called DB client interface. So everything works nicely because it adheres to the contract. It's just what happens behind the covers. So it doesn't really affect anyone else. It's just basically to keep everything intact and maintainability, testability, all that good stuff.
So why don't we put a link to the issue in this document and then color it green?
Also, copy in the chat.
Is this something we need to discuss, or can we just the work group handle it?
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Is this just a refactoring exercise that's internal to the group that you do it as normal process?
Yeah, it feels like a working group thing to me.
Agreed.
Good. Trevor, anything else in terms of refactoring we need to talk about?
I don't believe so.
Or technical debt, I should say.
I don't believe so.
Okay. Gang, I've got about 3 minutes before the top of the hour, so I think it's a good place for us to break today and give you a bio break before your next extended meeting. We will, again, rejoin at what is noon Pacific Daylight Time tomorrow, and we'll cover off the other work groups. Work group leads, it would help me if you could kind of breeze through your topics tonight. Just kind of clean it up if you've got any cleanup so that we can, cut to the chase tomorrow. If there's some items that just don't belong there, we just remove them before we get into it tomorrow. Okay. Any questions, comments, concerns before we break?
No, thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Really appreciate all the patience and input today. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Bye.